Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
So, Tuesday, throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday, Fallon. Thursday, no laying out podcast. What's the biggest deal of the week?
In terms of order that I knew of them happening, I'm going to go with the Fallon, you, and then the first pitch.
So how'd that play out?
I was just going to the game at Wrigley with my girlfriend and then two people that work at my management. And, I know a couple guys in the team, so went and saw them beforehand and then was kind of down on the field before. I'd never been to Wrigley, so I was kind of taking it all in. And it was about 12:40, and they were like, hey, do you want to throw out the first pitch? And I was like, what? And
you don't
like,
have yeah. that figured out yet?
Yeah, I was like, I thought they were joking because I'm like, this is like one of those things you have planned.
Sure.
And I was like, I don't know. And then everyone's like, yeah, come on, just do it. And I was like, all right, whatever, I'll do it. They're like, okay, be back in 15 minutes. I'm like, what? So I've no warm-ups, no
you
nothing.
You get to throw anything in the bullpen or anything?
Nothing. So I went and had a beer. That was all I had. I was like,
Did you fire a strike?
I didn't, no. It was way too much in my head that I was going to throw it in the dirt, and it did not go in the dirt.
Did you airmail him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen the clip yet. But yeah,
for good reason.
Well, first off, we got to address this. You are getting absolutely fleeced on cart fees, by the way.
How about that?
$200? How is this? What's going on here? What are you spending $900 in the pro shop for also?
Yeah, you know, I care about my family and my friends, so I guess I was just getting a lot of good gifts for them for Christmas or something.
I know you got money now, but I feel like you could get some of this. You could get a better deal on some of this stuff. Yeah. But usually I don't love asking other players about other players. You've been on several times, so we've done your background and all that. And we got to talk about last week's PGA Championship. You had a front row seat to kind of the resurgence of Tiger, and this is a very big deal in the golf world. But you've got a relationship with Tiger. You've formed one over the last few years, and it's got to be. I imagine it's interesting. You're 25 now, mm-hmm. and so you grew up watching him, and now you're friends with him. What's the genesis kind of your guys' relationship, though?
Yeah, our friendship. It's really cool, and every once in a while, I kind of have to pinch myself a little bit just because I don't know how it really happened. I mean, I kind of reached out to him a couple of years ago when he was hurt, and I wanted to talk to him about Augusta, and he wasn't playing, and so he was more than happy to help since he wasn't in the field. And we just kind of got along. Our personalities kind of meshed pretty well, and we're both competitive. But yeah, I mean, I just grew up watching him, and I feel like he is the reason I am where I am now, or the reason that I started loving golf as much as I did. And yeah, it's just, I really enjoyed the opportunity to try to learn from anybody, not necessarily him. I mean, guys like Phil or Davis Love or whoever it may be, I ask them so many questions because I just feel like if I can pull one thing out of a conversation of 20 things they say, then maybe I can use it to help me. And, you know, he's not quite as open as he was when he was hurt.
Did things change since in the last year or so when he's returned?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, if I get him in the right, you know, the right spots, then he'll still, you know, be pretty normal with me. But it's, we're not exactly going through a bunch of different shots that he knows before Augusta like we were a couple years ago.
When was it clear to you that he was going to be back in a big way? I mean, you had a front row seat kind of mm-hmm. in the early stages of it.
Yeah, when we first started playing, when he was back, and I mean, I was never going to say anything to anybody just because you don't know what's going to happen. But I mean, I told my family, I was like, if he stays healthy, I think I'll win this year just because he had the speed back. You could tell he really wanted to, and he wants to make that Ryder Cup team so bad. And he made that very apparent from the beginning of the year, which is pretty cool to see that he's played this well and given himself a very very, very real.
He's earned it.
Chance.
Oh, I mean,
exactly. Yeah, he's
a real
earned.
Chance. It's not, he's going to be on the team.
It's not something to where it's like, oh, we're picking him because he's Tiger Woods. It's like we want to pick him because he's playing, you know, a top five player in the world kind of thing right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, So it was cool to kind of see that whole transition. But I mean, the most important thing is he's healthy and he seems to be having fun, which is cool.
Well, and you know, halfway through that first round, you guys are paired together in the PGA Championship. It just looked like, you know, at least those first few holes, you got off to a hot start. He struggled in the start, and it was just like, man, all right, we can't get too excited about that. Like he's, you know, he's playing well, but like clearly he's not on JT's level right now. And then he just like rallies and just fires off what he did. Was that, I mean, it's not a course that probably set up that great for him. Were you surprised to see him struggle in the beginning, or were you surprised to see him turn it on, or what did any of that part of the process surprise
you? Yeah, it just was, it really was just kind of two holes. I mean, I mean, 10, we started on probably the hardest hole in the golf course, and 8:15 or 8:20 in the morning, that rough, if you missed the fairway on that hole, you weren't going to be able to get to the green. So making bogey there wasn't a big deal, but yeah, the double he made on 11 was bad. Wasn't a smart shot or just not a good shot where he hit in the water. And then he just did what he does so well, just kind of plots his way back. And it's really, really fun to watch playing tournament golf with him. Just the up and downs, you know, just how he grinds on those 4 and 5 footers. And, you know, I remember reading when I was a kid how he treats every 3, 4, 5 footer like it's to win the golf tournament, because you never know come Sunday if it is. And he really does, and he makes so many of them. He just makes those par saving putts when he needs to, and yeah, he had a great back nine on Thursday that realistically kept him in the tournament.
Sounds like you're still learning from him on the golf course and whatnot. I mean, you're a major champion now; you've made your own way, but like you're still picking up things in the middle of competition from him. But from your own perspective on the PGA Championship, you had a great week. Or kind of, what was your major takeaway of the week? Do you feel? And obviously, you won it last year. Do you feel, was there a sense of disappointment in not closing the deal this year? You walk away, I forget what you finished exactly.
Tied sixth.
Yeah. So do you walk away feeling accomplished after that week, or how's that go?
A little bit of both. I mean, I was really disappointed with my finish just because I felt like, I couldn't believe, you know, starting 4 back to Brooks, let alone anybody else, that I had a putt on 9 to take the lead.
Yeah.
It was pretty insane. And then obviously had a bad 3-putt there on 9, but then made great birdies on 10 and 11. And that was just like, you know, okay, I'm right back in this thing. And I was so comfortable, and I was so, the adrenaline was pumping. You know, I felt like I was going to have a great chance to win. And I just, I hit good shots there. I hit a good up and down on 12 and hit a really good shot into 13 and just kind of misread a putt. And then 14 just took all the wind out of my sails. And that was a bummer to finish those last 5 holes how I did. But my first title defense in a major, you know, giving myself a chance on Sunday, I was pleased with that part.
I mean, you came on the pod last year right after you won the PGA. We made a rule that you weren't allowed to come back on until you won the Masters, but we were willing to break it for this.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. How different was the feel? Like, how different did Quail feel versus Bellerive on that, like, the weekend? With all that was going on all around, how different was that?
It was a lot different, but the crowds at Quail were unbelievable, too. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know, it's unbelievable just the crowds that come to the PGA. You know, all the majors are obviously great, but somehow, some way, the PGA just always seems to get just a massive showing. This year was for a little different reason, but I just remember at Quail, like last year, coming up those 16th, 17th, 18th holes and just looking around and being, it's 20, 30 deep walking out. And it just was...
That 17th hole, there was a lot of people.
Unbelievable. And so that feeling was a little similar, but I mean, just the buzz in the air with all that was going on and the potential history and the potential storylines and a chance for me to go back-to-back. I mean, it was there was a lot going on.
So walk me through the 11th hole on Sunday.
I'm surprised it took you this long.
I wanted to kind of set the scene a little bit here, but what happened? Your 11th hole, tee is up. You know you're going to get roasted by me on Twitter if you lay up, so you go for it, right?
Yeah, it was it was a tough pin. It was a great setup. I mean, Carey always does an unbelievable job, I feel like, with the PGA, with the course setups. You know, they moved it up on Friday, and they kind of had the pin a little farther back. It was easier pin, a lot easier pin to wedge it to. We talked about it. I was hitting it really, really well. Jimmy was, he was probably 60, 40, 70, 30 of me laying up just because of, it wasn't as easy of a chip if you miss it in the left rough as it was before.
Yeah, Friday, right? It was really easy up and down from there.
Yeah, you just hit it over there, and you're chipping up the green.
Yeah.
but it was just a perfect 3-wood number. As far as the ball was going, I think it was like 298 hole or something. And I knew if I had a good 3-wood, I was going to land it right at the base of that hill. And I just felt like at that point in the tournament, I had a chance. If I make a 2, it's huge.
It's gas pedal.
Yeah, I was never going to make a worse than a 4 hitting laying up. And I mean, my wedge game has been really good the last month. I was probably going to have inside of 10, 12 feet. But to me, I felt like it was worth the risk. It wasn't going to go right because, you know, I can make birdie somehow from left. And yeah, I hit a little double cross there. And someone happened to get in the way.
Yeah. I was going to say, first, you struck the perfect pose. I mean, that was like the Jerry West moment. Mm-hmm. I could overlay the two images and it would be the same one. First, and one, you think that you're the logo. You're not the logo. But anyways.
No, so, I know I'm not.
Okay. It really nailed somebody? They didn't cover that on TV. I just assumed that it hit somebody. But what happened?
Yeah, I hit someone right in the head.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that. I was
yeah, I did. It was... yeah, he was, I guess, like just left of the path. It was probably 10 yards, like kind of from where the gallery is. And yeah, I didn't hear it or see anything because it was pretty far left. And we're walking up there, and the rules official's like, hey, he's like, you hit someone. Just want to let you know we have someone coming. I guess he's bleeding a little bit, but we have someone. He's fine and everything. And I'm like, oh, geez, not again.
You have
like,
some experience in this matter.
And I go to my bag and see that I didn't have any gloves left. And
you didn't have any gloves left?
No, I'd given some. Like, it was so hot that pretty much every day when I was done warming up, I would just throw them out. And luckily, I on Jimmy's side, I kind of keep some extra balls, gloves for scoring, whatever it is. And I get up there, did the usual sign a glove for him. We got his information, because if he has any kind of medical stuff like that, I mean, we want to take care of it. But he was good. He was in good spirits, and I was glad to see he was okay.
Well, I mean, there's so much going on that they kind of it was the broadcast is jumping in and out of what happened. So I actually didn't know that whole story behind it. But so you're up under that tree. You're not in a good position at all. What else happens while you're there?
Yeah, I actually have a good picture that someone sent me that I'll show you. It's a picture from they're down below. Because, I mean, the guy's just sitting there, and, like, I had to move the gallery because it actually kicked, like, 20 yards back and left, like, behind two trees. And that was – we're walking up there. The rules official's like, well, the good thing is, like, we've heard word you're fine. Like, you have a shot. And I'm like, oh, great. And I get up there. I'm like – what? Like, I'm behind two trees. Like, I'm in this rut. It was bad, but I had to move everybody, but it was kind of on a bank, and he was sitting there. I'm like, dude, like, you're fine. Like, I'm not going to hit you again. I'm going a little different route here. So he was able to stay there, but it was, that was a pretty unbelievable up and down because I'm just trying to make 4 at that point, and I had an 8-iron. I felt like if I kind of hit a low one and landed it just on that downslope, it could kind of get enough momentum to go up the hill, but if I landed it too far on the upslope, then it wasn't going to bounce up. And I just needed to get on the other side of the hole, try to get it 15, 20 feet. My putter was feeling pretty good that day. And just kind of one of those things that luckily just went in there, 8 feet and knocked it in.
Well, what happened between, I don't know when it actually happened, but didn't something happen with a scoreboard posting?
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading my putt and I was kind of like, I'm reading it and the view I was on, there was a scoreboard kind of right there. I was at 11 under, and I think Tiger was at 10, and they took the zero off, and the crowd's kind of waiting. But, I mean, I'm not paying attention. Sure. I'm reading my putt, and then they put the 11 up so that everyone knew you made a birdie, and they went nuts.
And scoreboard keeper does that while somebody's about to putt?
I know. And so I just kind of, like, had to regroup and just kind of walked around the hole, and that was a huge putt for me. I ended up making it, and I was like, that after all that happening, and I just kind of felt like I got a lot of momentum from that.
Yeah, you walked that one in, and that was, that up and down to pull you back into it. But so after you're done, Tiger was behind you, right?
Yeah, two groups.
What do you do? Like, after you're finished, this exhausting 4-day, do you care who wins behind you? Are you paying attention to that? What's your next step?
Yeah, no, I was looking at the leaderboards all day because I wanted to know where I was. And, I mean, once I got to 16 and made bogey there, I knew I pretty much didn't have a chance. I felt like if I went eagle birdie and posted, then I'd have a slim chance, but I could at least finish top 2 or 3. But yeah, then just kind of went par those last two holes. And then as soon as I got in, I was signing my scorecard and I saw Brooks hit it to like 8 feet on 16. And I was just like, all right, this is done. So, but it was pretty cool to see Tiger, birdie 18 like that.
Yeah. Twitter was a bit of buzz about something about you guys, with you and Shane Lowry on the 16th mm-hmm. hole, he's lining up a drop. You clarify that there was no issue between you guys, mm-mm. right? It was just a ruling.
No. Yeah. Shane being the player, and he wants to make sure he's getting the proper drop. And, he didn't hit a good tee shot over there to the right, and I hit one just right of the green, and he had a rules official come, and I guess the ruling he was getting just didn't really make sense, so he called another official over, and then that took a little bit of time, and I didn't have a very good lie, so I'm just kind of like looking at it, and I feel like I was over reading it, so I'm kind of just start walking around a little bit, and then the rules officials kind of couldn't figure out what the deal was, so Shane's like, guys, like I just need to know here, and because they kind of kept talking, it was just taking a while, and it just was an unfortunate time of the day for that, because I just made an unbelievable about 30 footer for par on 15, trying to keep this momentum going, and so finally I was just like, hey, I'm just gonna go, guys. It was nothing against Shane, it just was the timing of it, and wishing it didn't take so long.
Yeah. All right, this is a tough one. The globalists at Callaway are forcing me to say this. I imagine that Turncoat Tron had something to do with this as well, seeing as how he is rooting for the European team. But I know you guys remember the recently released Stars and Stripe Chrome Soft Truvis golf balls that Callaway came out with. It's got their popular Truvis pattern in a patriotic red, white, and blue design, which is very fitting since all of Callaway's Chrome Soft golf balls are made here in the U.S., Well, to gear up for the Ryder Cup, they announced a disgusting-looking Team Europe version with a European flag of the yellow and blue design. That's those same gross colors that we've seen year over year. Both of these golf balls feature everything you love about the performance of Chrome Soft, including the graphene-infused outer core, which allows Callaway to engineer an incredible feeling golf ball that's low spin off the tee with increased shot-stopping spin around the green. So, the Stars and Stripes and European Chrome Soft Truvis golf balls will be available in the U.S. and Europe in limited quantities online and at retail starting this Friday, August 24th. So visit CallawayGolf.com for more info. Pick yours up before they're all gone. And now let's get back to our podcast with JT. So going all the way back, I think we chatted last right before you were getting ready to take off, I guess, for the FedEx Cup and for the President's Cup. The President's Cup was your first team event as a pro, and not to get too much back to Tiger, but I think that's kind of where things started to change for him. And that mm-hmm. I heard so much feedback from, you know, the media was saying how much of an effect that kind of week had on him. What was it like to have Tiger in that team room in the President's Cup? I know he's assistant captain, mm-hmm. but like, does kind of everyone defer to him in that room?
A little bit. Yeah. It's nice because since he's a vice captain, you're like, hey, Tiger, I need another sandwich. Can you go get me that? So,
does he actually do it?
He takes it very seriously. He'll do whatever we need. To an extent, he knows that most of the time we're just messing with him, but it's good fun, and he takes it very, very seriously, which is even cooler.
Did anything about that first team experience surprise you? I mean, it's one of my favorite things to point out, though, that you've never played in a Ryder Cup, and we're going to get there. But with that first team experience, the President's Cup, anything there surprise you?
Not really. It just, I think because I'd been to a couple Ryder Cups with my dad working the PGA, and like I'd seen him. I watched so many of them, and I have so many friends that have played in a bunch. I don't know. I felt like I somehow knew what I was getting myself into, and I don't know. It was a blast. It really was. I mean, we played some really, really good golf that week, and it was very enjoyable.
It was dominant. So how does that experience relate to the Ryder Cup? I mean, it's a similar group in charge. It's mm-hmm. going to be made up a lot of the same guys. And how involved are you? Again, you're a rookie, but how involved are you in the process of like, who's going to be filling out those final four spots on the team? Who's pairing who? Has that process started yet? Or what goes on there from your perspective as a rookie that's already made the team?
Yeah, I talked to Jim a couple times. I talked to him during the week of the French because he wanted to know, you know, what I thought of the course or about it. I talked to him afterwards, kind of want to go through hole by hole after he went and played it. But, yeah, I mean, like for President's Cup, we kind of would talk as the picks were – that process was going strict, would call us, and we'd, you know, he'd ask us what we thought, ask you know, in an ideal situation, who are our ideal pairings? Who would we want to play with, not want to play with, whatever it may be? And because it is a big deal, but they want to get as much information as possible so they can all kind of dissect it and get together and kind of create the best teams.
And how did, for the President's Cup, you played with Berger, you played with Ricky, right? So what matters more to you, kind of similarity in style of play or just kind of friendship, or like wanting to play with buddies? How does that, what do you favor in that regard?
For me, I want to know the person's game and I want them to know my game. I think that was something that Rick and I did so well, and Boog and I just, Boog, that was just kind of a random thing, you know, like Strick came up and was like, "Hey, do you want to play with Boog?" And I was like, "I'd love to." I mean, yeah. Boog's got that demeanor. He doesn't care. And he played some unbelievable golf that day because I didn't have my best stuff and I was running out of gas and I was glad to have him.
You were screaming with running around with your head cut off.
Yeah. Hey, man, I was a heck of a hype man that day.
But we need to print Boog's quote after Saturday and like frame it in our house or something. He said something along the lines of, "Yeah, I mean, I hope we go out and beat him even worse tomorrow." You guys were up like 14.5 to 2.5 or something like that. And he's, "Yeah, I hope we go out and beat him even worse tomorrow." So you mentioned you played the Le Golf National at the French Open this year. Were you surprised at all that more Americans didn't go over and play that event as well?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I mean, I knew it was the thing about it is, being kind of in the middle of the season, you know, it wasn't too long before the British. And for me, it worked out well because I was going to have those 3 weeks off in the States. So, and I don't want to take 3 weeks off before a major. So I felt like it was a good opportunity to go see the course, but the field is going to be really good for world ranking. It's a Rolex Series event. It's a great purse. It's a great opportunity. I felt like it would have maybe set a little bit of a statement if I went over there and won a European Tour event there. You know, I want to win in as many different countries, places, continents, whatever it may be, as I can. And it would have been really cool, I felt like, to go over there and play well. But it did work out well. I mean, Paris was unbelievable. Versailles was incredible. It was a really, really fun week. I'm glad I went.
I was gonna say, it's a really tricky part in the schedule. Because you don't go play four events in a row. You don't go play French, Irish, Scottish, and then the British. Exactly. And you don't really want to go over, come back and go over, which is what you did. But I got a lot of questions. Were you surprised that more Americans didn't go over? But I said, if you really want to see the golf course, you can go over for a day or two.
Which guys did. You know, guys went before the British. And
it's going to play differently in September.
Exactly.
As well.
It's like going to play Augusta in December. It's like, yeah, it's cool to go play Augusta, but are you really getting that much prep for the Masters? No. It's just so I felt like playing it in tournament competition I just felt like it would help me a lot.
All right, so take us to Le Golf National. What's the golf course like for those that haven't seen it? And is it something? You know, I think it's going to be quite different than like what the setup was at Hazeltine and whatnot. But what do you think? What are you thinking after seeing that golf course?
It's a great course. I really enjoyed it. I hit 7 drivers in 4 rounds. So
wow.
It's very, very narrow. I mean, I remember walking around there and I was sending pictures to like Jordan and Rick, and I was just like, guys, like,
here's where you guys are gonna be.
Yeah. I was like, all right, so who gets the odds or who gets the there's a lot of water on the course, and it's a cool little layout. It is. It was windy a couple of days, so you had to flight the ball, you had to hit different shots. It was a lot of crosswinds, so it was never like, you know, straight in or straight down. It just was kind of, okay, you had to hold because the fairways were so narrow, you could never really ride the wind and get it curving. You had to try to hit it as straight as possible, so you had to do a lot of kind of working it against the wind. And I feel like, you know, being a good ball striker was something that I really enjoyed about the golf course.
And it's not a links course by definition, but it plays like a links course, right? In some way, does it play like a firm soil, firm ground, or does it play more target golf like it's American golf?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
I mean, the greens were somewhat receptive as the week went on. They got a little bit firmer, but yeah, the fairways were. They could get firm. If it was firm, I mean, they'd be extremely difficult to hit. And then coming into those greens, you need to be out of the fairway. So it just was, you know, I hit a lot of 5 irons, a lot of 4 irons off tees. I hit a lot of 3 woods holes that I felt like I could hit driver, but just wasn't necessary kind of thing. And
sounds like a good Tiger course. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it does. It's Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a ball striker to golf course.
What did you have any one major takeaway, something you learned about what you need to do while you're there, other than kind of that kind of style off the tee? Any major one takeaway?
Not really. It's it really is. It's just right in front of you. It's not like it was something where like, okay, man, I know that if I can't get there, I got to be over here kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like it's just right in front of you. You see the hole. You kind of know where the wind's at. You know where the pin is. And it just there's a couple holes you can play different strategy-wise. Like I know a couple guys that were behind me were just kind of hitting driver everywhere, but I didn't really see that when I was playing it. And so I guess there is some opportunity, but for the most part, it's just right in front of you.
The Ryder Cup courses are typically not trying to trick you. They're setting up for a good theater for match play.
So it's going
to
be great, too.
Yeah.
That first tee is going to be probably unlike anything a Ryder Cup's ever seen.
I can't wait to see what Reed does. It's going to be unreal. So, I mean, obviously, so much gets made about you and Jordan, the buddies thing, all that. We're like a million times past that. But it's going to come up again here in the coming weeks when it comes to partnerships. And obviously, he's paired very well with Reed. Mm-hmm. Do you guys foresee a chance that you guys might play together? Or you mentioned his name there and you mentioned Rick's name there. Is that kind of where you kind of see things falling out?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I like about myself in these team competitions is I really do feel like I could pair with a lot of people. I mean, I don't want to play with someone that I don't, if they have a different golf ball, if it's completely something that I have no experience with, something like that. But I mean, that goes the same for about everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, guys like Jordan and Ricky, I know their game really well. So Jordan and I have always talked that we want to play at some point, and we will at some point, whether it's this year or next year or 5 years. I mean, I'm very confident that we're going to have some success in these team events together. But and it's just hard to separate those two. You know, they've done so well, and as long as they keep winning points, you know, I'm perfectly fine with somebody else.
It is tricky. You do add an interesting twist to it. I was wondering if that happened, if you and Jordan play together, where does Reed play with? And I could see he and Tiger being a really good four ball team. And I know they play different golf balls, and you mentioned the different golf ball. How important is that to you in alternate shot to be paired with somebody that you play the same golf ball?
Yeah, it is, but it's nice because at the Presidents Cup, and I assume it's the same at the Ryder Cup, but you just kind of hit the other person's ball off the tee. So it's like Ricky would hit my ball off the tee, so that coming into the green with irons, I was hitting my ball, something I was comfortable with, and then he was just putting with it. Yeah, it's a little different putting. As crazy as it is, I mean, those golf balls feel different off the putter face, and Strick even made that comment that, you know, his speed was – he often had to putt with Tiger's ball a lot because he couldn't get the speed down right away because it was softer and felt like he just couldn't get it to the hole, which – it sounds bizarre. It sounds ridiculous, but it is true. I mean, Rick's ball is a little softer than mine. The cover was. So I kind of had some chips with it, some putts with it. But, I mean, both teams are going through the same stuff.
Yeah,
it's not just us.
Yeah, you just reminded me. I remember, I forget who it was, but somebody was going through an equipment change, and they were on the putting green and practicing with their new equipment. And they on like a 20-foot putt, they said the new equipment rolled 2 inches less. Like, they could tell. There was a 2-inch difference in the
golf
ball.
I don't get
ball.
That extreme.
I know. Yeah. I was just like, golly, you guys are so incredibly dialed in. And also, since you were last on, you won in Boston. You went on to win the FedEx Cup, the $10 million prize that goes with that. This was about a month or so after winning the PGA Championship. How does playing for that kind of cash compare to competing and winning a major championship, the kind of pressure?
You know, and you believe me or not if you want, but I really didn't feel any different. I think the fact that I had a chance to win the golf tournament helped because I was not thinking about the FedEx Cup at all. It's just like I wanted to win that fifth time, I think.
You won 5 times last year, so that would have been 6.
Okay, I wanted to win that 6th time because I think I read something that like only one other person had done that or something. I think it was Tiger, or I don't know, whatever it was. But it was something to where I knew it would have felt really good to close off the year like that. I mean, yeah, it was obviously unbelievable winning the FedEx Cup, not winning the Tour Championship. I don't care if I finished 30th in Atlanta, if I still win the FedEx Cup, that's great. But capping that week, that year off with a win would have been pretty special. And I don't know, I just didn't really think about it too much. I mean, when you kind of look up, you see the boards, they got the projected scoring all the time, and it's pretty crazy. I remember looking up at one point in the beginning of the back nine, and Jordan and I were tied. And that just...
Wait, they have the projected standings out there? Mm-hmm. At the wow, yeah. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they have projected in every tournament we play. I mean, obviously it's not as important, but it's yeah you get to Atlanta and you kind of look up and the projections are up and you see, you know, whatever, how many points ahead or behind. And yeah, at one point we were tied for first for the FedEx Cup. It's like, man, that would be some unbelievable TV.
Well, and it's... You know, to a lot of people that don't play for money, it's easy to kind of get lost. And you guys make a lot of money, play for a lot of money. But the difference between you won the PGA and it's about $2 million versus now you're playing for 10, like that is a enormous mm-hmm. difference. And I you mentioned the kind of distraction of trying to win the tournament. But that's what I was wondering if there's an amount of money that would matter to you, like to play for, that would make you nervous in that regard. Like, does it make a difference if you're playing for 20 versus 10 million?
I don't know. I've never, yeah. I mean, but the thing is like, I mean, I've been just as nervous when I go out and have a match with some buddies and we're, you know, we're playing for whatever we're playing for. It's not, there's everything is on a different stage or a different level. But I just feel like when you're, I've never really thought about money when yeah. I'm out there playing, just cause I'm so worried about just winning. And I feel that over the course of my career, I'm going to be fine financially, and I don't want to, I'm not out there for that. I'm out there to win as many tournaments as I can. But I've been fortunate to where I've never like been out there and like, oh man, I need to, if I don't win this, I cost myself this much money kind of thing.
That's, I remember, and it, as much as it sounds like a kind of media-ish answer, a public answer, but I remember asking you about it after you won it and you were like, dude, I honestly really don't care about the money that much. Yeah. And what didn't sound like lip service, but I remember even either you were a rookie or what year did you finish like third at Sawgrass? Was that your rookie year or your second year?
My second year.
Second year. Mm-hmm. I remember I asked you, I was like, you know, you just won like $500,000. What's that like? And you're just kind of like, yeah, I kind of plan to make a lot of money. It's not that big of a deal. So it's just, I find that interesting. But I mean, has your life in what way or has it changed since you won $10 million?
Yeah, I mean, it's... I've definitely done some things that I probably wouldn't have done. Mm-hmm. I mean, the most enjoyment I get out of it is taking care of my friends and family. I mean, going on trips, like we did a little family vacation last year to the Bahamas and just like, and not having to worry about it. And I don't know. I've always enjoyed being able to take care of the people that I'm closest to the most. It's just, it's really fun to me. I don't have any crazy hobbies or like stuff. I don't love cars. I mean, I have one car and I have another one coming, but it's like I don't have any desire to have six cars or like I'm fortunate to where I'm sponsored by Rolex and I have watches with them. It's like I'm not out spending my money a bunch of different ways, but it's so to me I get more enjoyment out of just kind of blowing it out on a weekend with some of my best friends than anything else.
And that's what, you know, we talked with Ernie Els a little bit about that too. It's kind of like he's in his late 40s still grinding out there playing a lot of golf, and he's made, you know, top five probably earnings in all time on the PGA Tour. But people don't really fully realize you can do so, like it's not all greed, it's not all for yourself. Mm-hmm. You can do so much, you have so much family you can take care of with fine, and so much for charity. He's so much of what he does goes to his charity and all that stuff. So
it's been fun too. Yeah, we've really like one of the coolest things actually was just talking to my girlfriend about that is, I mean, eventually I want to have a foundation. I want to do something when something truly hits home with me of what I want to do it with. But like last year I was in Louisville for Thanksgiving and we went to Target and just bought like $8,000 or $10,000 worth of stuff and went to the Boys and Girls Club of Louisville and just, cause I mean, you know, those kids, they don't get anything.
That means
and,
the world.
Yeah. And it's like, it was, but I was actually there and was able to give it to them. And that was really cool. So just doing stuff like that to where, you know, going to a random restaurant and you get a waitress or a waiter that's really nice and just tipping them a couple $100 just on a $10 tab.
Sure.
So stuff like that to where you can just kind of make a little difference in someone's life or someone's day.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's, you know, I'm very fortunate to be able to do it.
That's cool. So you had your insane 2017 season. You won five times. You won three times this year. How do you evaluate your current season? You're coming off a career breakout year. You win three times, but it's not as good as last season. Mm-hmm. How do you look back at this year and say that was a great year?
Yeah, that was definitely a great year. Cool. I think just not winning a major this year holds this year from being a great year. It's really the only difference. I mean, I feel I've definitely been more consistent this year. I've had a lot of really just kind of solid weeks. You know, I consider a top 10, 15, 20 sometimes a solid week. I mean, it's not good by any means. I feel like if I play how I should or I'm make the right decisions on the course, I should be in the top 10 or top 5, but I just had a lot of weeks where I just haven't had my best stuff, and I've kind of grinded out it. Yeah. And those are huge come this time of year. You know, that's the difference from me being 6th or 7th in the FedEx Cup and 2nd, and or being 6th in the world rankings instead of 3rd. So it's like that stuff is a big deal, and I take a lot of pride and consistency. But that being, it was funny because to myself, I put such a importance on, all right, I want to make every cut this year. I want to really finish I want to finish top 25 every event I play in. I want to finish top whatever many times. And then all of a sudden I'm like, man, like I haven't won. I feel like I haven't won in so long, or like I feel like I haven't had a chance to win. Like I'm kind of backdooring these 8s or 11s or whatever it may be. And yeah, I just was kind of practicing for Akron. I was like, man, like I want to win again, and it just kind of happened. So that was pretty fun.
one thing I've noticed too is just how in the early part of your career, you were very hit or miss. Like you would have mm-hmm. great weeks, but you would bottom out much more often than you mm-hmm. currently do. And I think that I feel like in stroke play and like the way the PGA Tour is set up, that's an okay style to be kind of in and out. And if you mm-hmm. miss cuts, it's not that big of a deal. But you guys, especially the top players, seem to take so much pride in making cuts. I mean, that's a mm-hmm. way bigger deal than I think people make it out to be. Because you turn on the TV, it's, you know, and on the weekend, it's the top 10 guys and whatnot. But people don't see that Friday grind of like, I'm not going home for the weekend.
Yeah, because you can never know what can happen on a weekend. Sure. You get some certain places. You know, I feel like a place like a Travelers is a great example where it's, you know, the winning score at the tournament's always 13 to 16, 17 under. But like 2 under makes a cut every year. It's one of those places where the scores kind of fluctuate a lot, and you can make the cut, you know, by 1 or something like that, and then all of a sudden you shoot 64 on Saturday and then 62 or 3 on Sunday, and you have a chance to win. It's like, so just giving yourself a chance. Nothing pisses me off more than when I miss the cut and it's just, and you don't even have a chance.
And you've obviously had a great couple years, but it took a bit of a time for your breakthrough to really come. I say that with the perspective of one of your good friends, obviously Spieth, was busted out in a big way.
That's the second time you refer to him.
But I'm trying to get to a certain point of it, like at so many levels along the way, like you outperformed him, right? So at amateur levels, at different levels, and it feels like, I guess, was it difficult for you to watch that knowing you were capable of it? And do you feel like you've kind of gotten to a point where, all right, now I've really proven myself on this stage and deserve to be mentioned in the same sentence?
I still don't think. I mean, he's won 3 majors.
Oh, I know.
And I you know, I've won 1, and he's still won. I think he's won more times than I have on mm-hmm. tour. He has more accomplishments, but I've definitely making steps in the right direction. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out here that I think just because of my last 2 years, I get mentioned in the same sentences as when, as a whole, I don't know if I deserve it quite yet. And, which I'm fine with. It's like, look, I mean, I'm only in my 4th year on tour, and you know, by my 6th, 7th, and 8th. And when I'm played as many as Rory or as many as DJ or as many as Jordan, I feel like I have the capability of having the same accomplishments or more than they have. But for the time being, I'm very pleased with how I've progressed and gotten better each year.
One of the more eventful things that happened to you this year was an incident at the Honda Classic that caused some social media waves that mm-hmm. almost seemed to overshadow the fact that you won the tournament. We've heard you tell the full story, you know, in snippets in the press conference and whatnot, but for the sake of this podcast, take us through what happened at the Honda Classic on the 16th hole, I think.
Yeah, it was, you know, and I made it very well known after the fact. I obviously wish I didn't do it. I overreacted, whatever it may be, but yeah, it's just the crowds at the Honda can get a little rowdy, you know. It's and
a little frat bro, a little bit, you know, boozy.
Exactly. So it's you can tell that the drinks were flowing very late in the afternoon, and yeah, this guy had kind of been needling me a little bit, and still that's gonna happen. I need to get over that fact, but finally, it just was the fact that I just had enough, and I just. After he said that, I turned around and I was just like, dude, like, you got to go. I'm trying to win a golf tournament here. I don't really care. And I handled it very poorly. I said that, but I shouldn't have done it at all. I mean, in retrospect, it's just one guy. And because of that one guy, I've created a lot more people that don't like me as opposed to one guy. So, it is what it is. I mean, if that's the worst, one of the worst things I do in my career, I'll be just fine.
Well, the first question I had though is how often does something like that happen? Has that ever happened at any other point? I mean, the cameras picked it up is what really made it a big deal. But mm-hmm. I mean, is that a totally unusual thing for a fan to get ejected, or for you to ask to be a fan to be ejected, or a fellow playing partner to request that from security of some way?
It's happened more lately. It's because at these tournaments, you know, guys just, they get drinking so much, and it's just like they kind of feel invincible on the other side of the ropes. And look, I understand that the needling and stuff like that's going to happen, and we do understand that, but it's just like when it's inappropriate, or when guys are doing it like as we're over shots, or they're just, I mean, when it gets ridiculous, it's like there's just no spot, no place for that. You know, it's, yeah. I understand, yeah, we're athletes, we're adults, but it is golf. And I think, you know, people so often are like, well, you know, that's just typical golf being soft or whatever it is. But it's like, dude, like those people,
it's a different sport.
People in football, basketball, baseball, those players can't hear them. You know what I mean? Like, you think Tom Brady can really hear all those people that are dog cussing him in the stands? No, it's like, they're right there. They're right next to us. And it's like, when you start saying stuff about personally, or I remember it was so cool. At LA this year, this guy was just nonstop on me on 17. And he just was, being so inappropriate and just rude. And finally, I just kind of like turned around. I'm like, dude, like, it's good. And then he turned around, of course, act like he wasn't there. And then he didn't want to say it to my face. And I just kind of, I looked at him and I kept going. And then he said it again. And then Rory, I was playing with, he came down and he was like, get this guy out of here. He's like, there's just no place for it. I understand that there's different tournaments and different moments that that you can get rowdy and you can be loud, but it's just like you said, it is golf, and it's a shame that it's kind of gotten that way. And I do wish that I had that moment over.
Well, it's kind of an unforeseen fallout of the cell phones being allowed now, is that people can film themselves yelling at a player and post it and like, look how funny I am. Like, there's people that. I just go and harass players and stitch their video together and post it to social media at the end of the day. And mm-hmm. I've turned into somewhat popular social media accounts because of their harassing players and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, I don't know. And I know that golf, like you mentioned, just golf kind of getting a bad rap in that regard, but it's a sport where you guys need it to be quiet when you're hitting. Like when I'm playing around, I don't want people yelling when I'm getting ready to hit. I don't want people taunting. Like it's just not, not part of the game.
It isn't. And you look at, I always look at Augusta. It's like, look, they don't sell liquor there, and people don't get out of hand, and people understand that if you yell, they'll kick you out and you can't have cell phones. And we never have any problems at Augusta. Yeah. And it's just, it's unbelievable. I saw a picture. Actually, I was showing Tiger last week of a picture of him last week. Did you see that with all the phones?
Yeah. Kennedy's picture. Yeah.
It's like, it's unbelievable. It's like, why would you do this when you could just watch it live?
Yeah.
You know, Rory and I were talking about that because Tiger hit one offline and we were kind of looking back and everyone's got their phones and we're just like, this is unbelievable,
man.
It
can't be good quality photos or video.
Well, it's like, what do you do with it?
Yeah.
You know, like, what are you going to, like, wouldn't it be cooler to just tell the story to your friends? Like, hey, I was right there, as opposed to, here, look at this really crappy video I took that everyone's yelling and you can't really see anything.
Yeah. No. Well, and there's obviously a lot of fallout from it. And what has kind of that been like? I mean, do you feel like fans have turned on you? Like, has it stuck around? Did people get over it? What has that been like?
Oh, no, people definitely haven't gotten over it. You know, there's certain accounts or certain people that make sure that they don't let them forget. And it is what it is. But I took that stuff very personally for a couple of weeks. I was struggling after that. It was the first time I'd really felt like I had people hate me and rooting against me. And people still yell, get in the bunker to me all the time. And at this point, it's just kind of funny.
You got to steer into it at this point.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like, man, like, let's let it go. Is it really?
That's kind of what I was just surprised at. And it's hard because, like, obviously people accuse me of being a fanboy on your behalf or defending you. But I was like, dude, if Bubba ejected somebody, like, I'd be like, yeah, they probably deserved it. Like, I feel like that would make sense. And I try to put everything through that realm of, I just felt like the reaction was just way, way, way too strong. You can't say like, oh, toughen up, like, oh, that's just golf and whatnot, and then treat such a very minor incident as if you
Yeah, it's a good point.
Hurt somebody, you know, or like actually did something that was wrong. That's kind of the issue I have with it.
Yeah, every once in a while, like I try not to just like read the comments or read stuff of anything I post. But if you ever get some time, it's pretty entertaining because it's always goes back to I'm surprised he didn't get that guy kicked out or did do this. It's like, dude, like I kicked out one guy. I mean, it's like I stabbed him with a trident and like escorted him off the golf course. I mean,
I was gonna say, gosh. it's much funnier to joke about all the people that you clock in the head with your tee shots.
So. Yeah, I don't kick them out for being in the way or anything. I mean, geez, could be worse.
All right, let's do a few more little random grab bag questions. All right, how much do you weigh?
I weigh about 160 pounds now.
Because they still on the broadcast say 145 every single time. Yeah. So I figured that was not the case. Mm-hmm. Do you have one favorite stop on tour every year?
I mean, are we excluding majors here?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I love the Players. I love the Memorial. I love both of those tournaments.
Those are the two that stick out to me, I think.
Charlotte's great, too.
Yeah, from a fan experience, both of those places are just such great viewing experiences. You've kind of all of the majors you've played in, I feel like the Open Championship has been the one that's eluded you the most. Mm-hmm. And do you have any, why is that, I guess? And do you have any future plans to maybe play more links golf and leading up to the Open?
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance I might go play the Scottish or something next year just because I love links golf. Yeah. And I truly do believe that I will win at least one or two British Opens. I love that kind of golf. I feel I'm very creative. I feel that I can hit the shots, but I just, for some reason, haven't performed very well. Yeah, it just so happens to be that, you know, the 3 years I've played, I've had three bad draws, and that's a part of the British Open, unfortunately. And it is what it is, but I mean, over a long career, that stuff hopefully will even out. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I don't know. I've really just had one kind of, a couple bad holes the last 2 years. I mean, this year I had three consecutive holes where I made doubles, and it's just like you can't do that in a major. Yeah. And then 2 years ago I made like a nine and a double or something, and it's like, and I missed the cut by one this year, and I missed it whatever by two the year before. So it's like I'm taking myself out of these tournaments just in a couple holes just by doing something stupid. So it's like I don't know. I feel that we had a great game plan for Carnoustie this year, and I enjoyed it, and I was playing pretty well. I just had three holes that killed me.
That'll happen quickly out there. But what do you love about links golf?
It's just so fun. I mean, you can play totally different courses, even though you play the same course each day. You know, you get different wind. This year was so fun because it was so baked out and so firm. Mm. But I love, you know, sometimes when it gets rainy, windy, and you can hit a six iron from 130 yards just and you landing it, you know, 80 yards and letting it roll. I mean, that stuff is enjoyable to me. But yeah, in terms of the success I've had at the Open, I don't know exactly what it is, but we'll get it figured out.
Do you have a favorite links venue that you've played at ever? I mean, what's your favorite
Royal course? County down.
I had a feeling that was gonna be the one.
That
one. What makes that one stand out?
It was awesome. I just really, really liked it. I thought it was a beautiful course too, but I don't know, I just remembered a lot of holes out there that I really enjoyed, and you know, that great, the 18th great finishing hole, and that ninth hole is just unbelievable. But
that's interesting because a lot of pros don't like blind shots, and there's a lot of blind shots.
There are a lot of blind shots, but it's just I don't know, I feel like it's just a very true links, and Kings Barnes is pretty unbelievable too. Definitely one of the prettiest links courses you'll play.
Did you play an event at Kings Barnes, or you just
first professional event was actually the Dunhill Links. Okay. Yeah, so I played there.
Who's a player that you've seen that's not in the mainstream discussion, and you can kind of define that whatever level you want, that you were really impressed with, the guy that's like should be on people's radar that is not on people's radar just yet?
I mean, what kind of world ranking are we thinking?
You can be 30 if you want. I mean, it could be as simple as like people don't understand how good Xander Schauffele is, or it might be anything in that regard of like, is there anybody that sticks out to you as kind of like got your attention, maybe you played with or something that did something that really impressed you?
Yeah, Xander is definitely.
I gave you that one.
I know he is really good. I'm just confirming that. But
well, that was my takeaway from Malaysia, because you played with him in Malaysia, right? And I was really impressed with his ball striking.
I was too. I never played with him.
Yeah,
but I mean, I'm biased, but I mean, I think once a guy like Bud Cauley wins, I mean, just how good he hits it is. Mm-hmm. it's ridiculous. And we've played a lot of golf together. He's obviously one of my best friends, but you know, I think when he comes back from this little accident, I think that he's obviously hungrier now, but, and someone like him and Trey Mullinax, man, Trey is so good. And I think the Valero this year was huge for him. Just getting in contention, having a chance to win. But I think those are two kind of guys that once they win or once they get in contention more, I mean, Bud's had a lot of chances, but Trey is someone that he hits it so far and drives it so straight, and his ball striking is unbelievable, that once he can just kind of touch up some of the other parts of his game, I mean, he's someone like a, you know, like a Charles Howell that'll play 30, 25 years out here and just absolutely be an ATM because he's so good.
In that realm, like, do you feel comfortable enough to be, or do you feel like enough of a veteran to go to him and be like, all right, here's what you need to clean up, here's what you need to get better? Do you give advice to people like
for
that?
For sure, yeah. For sure. I mean, someone like Bud knows, but, sure. But Trey, you know, this is, I guess, just his second year. So any way that I can help him, you know, I like playing practice rounds with him, and he'll ask stuff about the course, but he's gotten better at knowing what he needs to do. And, you know, he's got a great caddy who's really good for him on his bag. And, yeah, it just, with Trey, sometimes you have to say it a couple times to kind of get it to really sink in. But, I think he's learning a lot. It's just, you know, the process is sometimes a little slow when it comes to learning.
Obviously, Bud was in a car accident there at the Memorial this past year, and he's one of your best friends and your roommate. What has that recovery process been like? I mean, have you been up close and personal and seeing it all, and kind of take us through, like, from that day? I know that was a really tough time for you all the way to now. It seems like he's made quite the progress.
Yeah, it's been good, and I mean, a lot of it is just kind of the swelling and everything, just is getting all that. His range of motion's good, and his ribs are healed, which was great. The surgery went well, but yeah, I mean, that was one of the toughest nights that I'd had since I could remember. I think I got like an hour and a half of sleep that night. It was on Friday night, so I mean, and then I had to go out and try to play golf on Saturday and Sunday. And I was, when I went and saw him at the hospital on Saturday afternoon, it for some reason calmed me a lot. I think being able to talk to him and seeing him, and just kind of seeing his charisma and seeing that he was okay.
It was all still there.
Yeah, it helped. And because I didn't know what to expect when I went in there. I didn't know how he was going to be, if he was going to be mad. So it helped going in there and seeing him, and I was able to kind of ease off a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's been a tough recovery for him, and I know he wants to get back out there, but you know, he's just starting to hit balls again, which is awesome. And I know I'm pumped to have him back out.
So take us through, this will be it, last one, but kind of what is Jupe life like? Who are all the guys that live down here? I mean, I've got a decent idea of it, but how does it work out? Who do you hang with the most down here? Who hangs with each other? How's it work out?
Yeah, I mean, I hang, Bud and I do about everything together when we're home, but I mean, I hang out with Rick and Allison a bunch. I mean, Brooks is down here, DJ, Boog, Patrick Cantlay, Patrick Rogers, Kevin Tway. We got a couple other buddies that are here that we hang out with. Peter Uline's here. Camillo, Keegan, John Curran, Jamie Lovemark.
Jeez.
And
everybody at the Bears Club.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, Rory's here. I feel bad. I'm leaving so many people out, but it's just.
I don't think you mentioned Tiger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big Cat. it's great. There's just so many. There's always games, which is nice, but.
Do you have to schedule it in advance, or do you just show up at the Bears Club and people are there?
It just kind of depends. You know, well, when, like, off season, when it's, you know, just November, December, January, when everyone's here and the courses are good, then you're kind of there. Pretty often, if you text someone the night before, hey, you got a game, be like, I already got something set up, or whatever it may be. And everyone kind of has their groups that they kind of hang and play with. But yeah, it's always pretty easy to find a game.
Who's the hardest guy to get on the golf course? Like, just never like, can't pull him out of, and you say, like, oh, let's go play a game, and they're like, nah, I can't.
Probably Brooks.
Brooks?
Yeah, he's never really, not that he's not a hard worker or anything, but he's always enjoyed his downtime.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've gotten a lot better at that. I mean, I like not really touching a golf club for a little bit when I'm off, and I mean, he just kind of works out. He'll go out in the boat and he'll just hang out. But yeah, he's not someone, when he has an off week, he'll spend five of those days practicing. You know, he may spend two or three and he maybe go play, but he'll just kind of go hit balls for a couple hours. And and take it easy. And then he'll spend kind of like I do, you know, spend his time working it on the on site that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
What is your downtime? Like you mentioned that, and how much time do you spend off? I mean, I know like us amateurs at home, when I spend like 5 or 6 days away from a golf club, when I pick it back up, I don't even know where the club face is. How long does a layoff have to be for you to feel like that?
It just differs. It really does. I get in the same habits. I mean, I know after taking 3 days off, I'm going to go out and my club face isn't going to be good halfway at the top. I'm probably going to have it super laid off, and then I'm just going to be kind of wiping at the ball. And so I kind of have to go through my fundamental, my checkpoints to get everything kind of fixed up. But it's, I don't know. I used to be really bad at taking time off and bad at getting my feels back when I come back, but I have gotten better. And so, I mean, I enjoy taking 5 a week off, like not really touching. I'll slowly get into it Thursday, probably have a pretty good day Friday, Saturday, maybe go play. And then Sunday, just kind of do something light. And I feel like by then I could start a tournament on Monday, but then I use that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to really kind of hone in on the certain areas of my game I need to.
Are there ever tournaments you show up for? I know I said last question, but are there tournaments that you show up for that you're like, oh man, I'm not ready to play a week. I'm not ready to play this week.
Yeah. I've had that a bunch.
Really?
And as funny as it is, I've played well. I've won tournaments like that. I mean, in Akron this year, even I was like, I didn't really know because I'd taken some time off and I just was kind of getting back into it. Then all of a sudden, we worked really hard and found something and played really well. But yeah, I mean, I feel like some of those times, because it takes the expectations away and you kind of don't think about that as much, it sometimes helps.
Very last one, I promise. Is there a future major venue that your eyes kind of light up at? Like, do you have a future major venue at all?
Oh, Valhalla, like, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't put into words how excited I am for that. I it's going to be to the point where I need to calm myself down because it's my only opportunity to ever play in front of my hometown and my home crowd. And it'll just make me feel the most special that I can. So it'll be really cool being a past champion there and going to the champions dinner, and just being able to play. And I mean, I've played that course so many times. It's 25 minutes from my house and staying at home. So, I'm really, really excited for that one.
Cool. All right. We'll wrap it at that. JT, thanks for letting me come down.
Absolutely.
Enjoyed it. Appreciate the time. Best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you, sir.
Take it home for us.
We'll do.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different.